John Munson in for Joy Cardine on The Joy Cardine Show today. At 1,776 feet, yes, 1776, the One World Trade Center in Lower Manhattan is the tallest building in America, as well as the world's most expensive skyscraper. This hour on The Joy Cardine Show, my guest discusses not only the building's impressive architectural feats, but why she calls it a story of American hope, ingenuity, and pride. My guest is Judith Dupré, a writer, architectural historian, and public speaker. She's the author of several books, including Skyscrapers, A History of the World's Most Extraordinary Buildings, and the recently released One World Trade Center, Biography of the Building. Judith Dupré, welcome to The Joy Cardine Show.
I'm so happy to be here, John.
Well, I'm happier here, too, because no one wants to listen to me talk for an hour. So let's start out with, the most obvious question. Why did you write this particular book?
Well, you know, I had been involved at the Trade Center since the early 90s. I did my research at the North Tower when I was writing Skyscrapers. And then I wrote a book on American monuments and memorials. So I wrote about the 9/11 memorial. And I've also written books on churches and bridges. So all four building types, skyscrapers, churches, bridges, and memorials, are at the New World Trade Center. So I was eager and ready to write about the new towers.
Well, as I've looked at pictures and been reading about this building, I mean, everything about it is incredibly impressive. But what impresses you the most about the One World Trade Center?
I think that One World Trade is a remarkable building. And what impresses me, even though it is absolutely huge, it's the tallest skyscraper in the Western Hemisphere, it has this wonderful humility. I call it a gentle giant. And it has a wonderful glass facade that reflects everything around it. So it's self-effacing. And I think it's a timeless design that will remain beautiful for many decades to come.
And the look and the shape of the building, you refer to the glass and the self-effacing nature of it. Was that something that was intended in the design? What's the significance of the look and the shape of the building?
Well, David Childs, the lead architect for that building from Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, began his long career in Washington, D.C. So he was very aware of the National Mall and the monuments on the Mall, particularly the Washington Monument. And the Washington Monument is a classical obelisk. And this is an ancient commemorative form, first used by the Egyptians and then adopted by the Romans. And so the oldest monument in the United States to the American democracy is the Washington Monument. And David realized that this new tower had to do double duty. It had to be a skyline commemoration of the 9/11 memorial, which is at its feet, and it also had to be an office tower. And so he adapted that obelisk form, so it's has a square base, and the tower tapers as it rises.
Mm-hmm. And this may seem like an obvious question, but perhaps you have some personal thoughts on this. How important was this particular project following the attacks on the World Trade Center?
I think it's safe to say, without any hyperbole, it was the most important structure that we have built, certainly in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. There was, and as the first chapter of my book goes through this, the great ferment from 2001 through 2005, when architects and planners and developers and many agencies and organizations all over the world were weighing in on what should happen on these 16 acres. And there was a question if anything should be built at all, because it was newly sacred ground and so many people died there. And then we moved to the issue of, okay, we will build, but what should we build? And the tower had an impossible task. It had to stand for everything that was lost on 9/11, and it had to be a symbol of all that was reclaimed on that day. mm-hmm. without showing any arrogance, any hubris, it had to stand tall. So there was a tremendous symbolic burden put on that building.
And it had to memorialize also. I mean, you know, you, yeah, wow, that's a lot
it
of
had
pressure.
It had to memorialize, and what is so interesting about the design and what is so subtle and beautiful is that the DNA of the original Twin Towers, that 200-foot square footprint, is the, it's the tower's footprint, but it's also that's also the size of the two memorial pools on the site.
Mm-hmm.
And then the building rises. The roof line is 1,368 feet. And at that roof line, there is a 6-foot stainless steel parapet, and the lower edge is 1,362 feet. Those two heights are the heights of the original Twin Towers. They're actually fraternal twins. They weren't identical twins.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And then, of course, we have the spire that brings it up to its final 1,776 feet.
And that number was no accident. That number was no accident either.
No accident at all. That is the year that the Declaration of Independence was signed. And Daniel Libeskind, who is the master planner of the World Trade Center, identify that height and that number as being so important to the symbolism of this building. He himself was an immigrant to this country, and so when he was very young, the images of the Statue of Liberty's upraised arm, the vital immigrant culture in this country, the American democracy itself was just a huge inspiration to him. And so the building is very, has lots of symbolism in it.
The Twin Towers went down, of course, on September 11th, 2001. The One World Trade Center didn't open, however, until November of 2014. Why did it take so long?
Well, that is the question that people have been asking for 15 years. Why did it take so long? And there were lots of reasons for that, John. There was a long period of trying to make sense of the shock of 9/11 and the grief of all, 3,000 souls lost, almost 3,000 souls. And then there were many stakeholders, meaning many city, state, federal agencies, all kinds of private entities that had a legitimate claim to that site. The other thing that was happening is this was the most scrutinized project in our country's history. The press obviously weighed in, but so did the public. And I make the point in the book that there was there were many forums where people could express their opinions. Many opinions were expressed. There were disagreements. There were negotiations. There were finally compromises, and we came to a final design. In other words, democracy ensued. Everyone had a voice, and everyone's voice was heard, and which is a very positive thing. But the downside of that was that, there was this smothering of noble intentions. That, the desire to let everyone's voice be heard, for everyone to be allowed to weigh in on this building, caused additional delays that were as significant as the more tangible factors of time and money.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about One World Trade Center. There's a new book out documenting the history and construction. It's a biography, basically. It's titled One World Trade Center, Biography of the Building. Judith Dupre is the author. She's my guest this hour on the Joy Cardine Show. We're wondering what you think about this. What are your thoughts on the One World Trade Center? Maybe you visited the building or the One World Trade Center grounds. Do you think it's an appropriate replacement for the Twin Towers? Or perhaps you think something else should have been done with that site instead. What questions do you have about the structure? We'll be talking about that very thing this hour on the Joy Cardine Show. And 800-642-1234, the number to call. to join our discussion, 800-642-1234. The email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And you can find the Joy Cardine Show on Facebook and leave a comment or question there. You know, one of the unique things about this building or about this project, somehow not a single person died during the building's construction, which is almost unheard of in projects of this magnitude. To what can we attribute that aside from just being careful?
Indeed, that is an extraordinary statistic. It used to be there was a formula for these very large-scale building projects, and it was for every $1 million spent, a life would be lost. The safety measures on this tower and on the eight other major structures that are on that site were extraordinary. The Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, which owns the site, as well as One World Trade Center, along with the Durst Organization, the director of construction there, Steve Plate, is the most precise human being you'd ever want to meet. He's an engineer. He's from a union family. He kept everyone on track. The other thing that I have to say, 49 local New York, New Jersey unions worked on that site. And these guys, and women too, but mostly men, these union brothers are experts. They know how to build big and how to build safely. And I think there was also an underlying feeling from everyone, certainly everyone I spoke to, and that's numbers in the hundreds at this point, that there could be no more loss at this site, that enough had been lost, that there was so much suffering. And I think that everyone that worked on that site took it on as a very personal mission. And then there were safety measures in terms of the construction that were innovations, first time ever. The Tishman Construction Company, it's an AECOM company, they developed something called a cocoon. And it was a giant net that that encased the upper part of the building so that workers and their tools, and, you know, they're very, very high up, and it's very windy up there, 1,000 feet up, that they would be caught by this net should there be an accident. And I don't think anyone actually ever fell. Certainly, tools and things fell, but they were caught so that the people on the ground were also safe.
Yeah, that's something people don't think about, really. But if you're walking anywhere near a construction site, you probably should. We're talking about the One World Trade Center. A new book has been released, authored by Judith Dupre, who's with me on the Joy Cardine Show this morning. The book is titled One World Trade Center, Biography of the Building. Welcoming your thoughts and questions about this structure and how it was built and what it means at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. What does it mean to you that we put up a new building on the site of the Twin Towers? How important is that? 800-642-1234. We'll take a short break. We'll be back with more with Judith Dupre and hopefully with you if you choose to join us. John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. One World Trade Center, tallest building in America, and I believe the third tallest building in the world, 1,776 feet to the top of the spire. We're talking about that building and what it means with the author of the book, One World Trade Center, Biography of the Building. Judith Dupre is with us. She's a writer, architectural historian, and public speaker. The author of several other books, including Skyscrapers, A History of the World's Most Extraordinary Buildings. 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join the program. You can also email talk@wpr.org and find the Joy Cardine Show on Facebook and leave a comment or a question there. Judith, the One World Trade Center was going to be called the Freedom Tower until the Port Authority changed it to One World Trade Center in March of 2009. Why the change?
Well, the Port Authority realized, many people realized, that the Freedom Tower, and many people still call it the Freedom Tower, by the way, but Freedom Tower was sending a political message. And Christopher Ward, former executive director of the Port Authority, made a very important point, and it was that freedom, the concept of freedom that we as Americans value so much, was larger than any one building. And that we were diminishing the concept of freedom by labeling this tower or any tower with that name. And then the real estate agents got into the act and said, yes, we would be much more successful leasing this building if we had a street address. And so for lots of reasons, the name was officially changed in 2009 to One World Trade Center. And I think it was a smart move. It was a good thing for many reasons.
We had a caller, Kent, in Ashland, who couldn't stay on the line with us, but he had a question. He wanted to know, what kind of businesses are in One World Trade Center? Do they make the building less of a threat than the trade centers were with the businesses that were in them?
Well, the anchor tenant at One World Trade is Condé Nast, media giant, and their deciding to move down to the Trade Center was huge because it shifted the landscape of the industries that are in Lower Manhattan, which traditionally Wall Street were financial companies. But now there is a great move of creative companies, communications companies, young, hip people working in Lower Manhattan. And the reason, certainly Condé Nast's presence is very important, but the reason for that is one that people might not know, and that is because 11 subway lines and ferry lines and buses all converge at the World Trade Center. And as the cost of renting an apartment in Manhattan, you know, it's just beyond the reach of most of us mere mortals, people are living in the outer boroughs, in Queens, in New Jersey, Staten Island, Brooklyn. And so access to mass transit, really important.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of creative media companies at the World Trade Center. I think that in terms of whether their presence makes the building more or less of a target, I don't think so. I think I know that pretty much everyone I spoke to agreed that yes, this new building is a target.
Luckily, yeah, just because of the location, if nothing else.
Because of the location. But one person very highly placed said, you know, what's sad is they'll come up with something else, meaning terrorists. But the silver lining is that after 9/11, security experts, terrorism experts, engineers, architects, people from all over the world joined in this extraordinary effort to study what happened on 9/11, and that includes the New York Police Department, many police departments and terrorist protection groups from around the world, also New York City firefighters. Everyone got together and said, we have to do this better, and what can we do?
And so what did we learn from the collapse of the Twin Towers about structural security that was implemented in the One World Trade Center?
We learned so much. They studied photographs. They studied photographs. They studied the structure. And everyone agreed it had to be done better. And so the most important technological leap forward at One World Trade Center is that it is built around a concrete core with walls that are almost, some places, 6 feet thick. It's also made, for all my engineering friends out there, it's 14,000 PSI concrete, strongest concrete ever used in a skyscraper. And so that concrete core is planted in bedrock 85 feet below below street level, and it goes all the way up to the roof. And inside that core are all the building's vital systems, ventilation, communications, water, communications, as well as all the staircases and the elevators. So everything protects the mm-hmm. systems and the occupants.
Sure.
It's a very effective way of building a skyscraper, but because of peculiarities having to do with how New York City unions build, it was always steel first, concrete second. And after 9/11, they sat down, the engineers, WSP, Parsons, Brinker, Hoff, extraordinary engineers, and the architects sat down with the heads of the unions and said, guys, we have to do it differently. And so we have a concrete core here that is very strong and protects everyone inside of the building.
We have a caller on the line. Let's go to that call. Christopher is with us from Verona. Christopher, thanks for joining us on the Jay Cardine Show today.
Thank you so much. I was wondering about, I remember when this happened, there was a lot of, my main question is, I always thought, like, building duplicates of what was there would have been the biggest statement of strength and, you know, being a strong country and standing up and everything like that. Why did that ever come up, or was there any? I know there was a lot of debate about the design, but I was always wondering about
that. Well, many people wanted to rebuild the Twin Towers exactly as they were, only even taller. And I think, Chris, you'll enjoy this first chapter of the book where I touch on all the different proposals that were made on how we should rebuild. But this is the thing. Now, I lived in Lower Manhattan, just a few blocks from the Trade Center, for 20 years. Nobody loved those designs, you know, those towers, until they went down. And now, of course, they are enshrined in memory. But the fact is, they were not hospitable buildings. They were built on a super block, on a raised block that cut off circulation of all the little streets in Lower Manhattan. They were, the elevators shook like a son of a gun when you went up to the top. And they weren't, the windows were very narrow. There weren't spectacular views. There were all kinds of things that were not great about the Twin Towers. And so even though lots of proposals were floated to rebuild them, I don't think that was never going to happen.
Well, the original Twin Towers, I mean, arguably, they were pretty plain. I mean, you basically had a couple of square stacks.
Exactly.
It wasn't, I'm sure that, well, I'm sure to somebody it was art, but I mean, it didn't really, they were more, appeared to be more utilitarian, but you're saying they weren't even really that.
They were, well, obviously, they were utilitarian. I mean, people were there and working every day in those buildings, but they were not, you know, lots changed since the early 70s when those went up.
Mm-hmm.
They also, you know, weren't particularly energy efficient. I mean,
sure.
The elevators in the new tower, check this out. They generate, when an elevator goes up, it uses energy. When these elevators, this is ThyssenKrupp's state-of-the-art elevators, they generate energy when they come down. The windows, 13-foot-high glass panels, and thousands of them cover the building, bring in daylight, reducing the need to turn on lights. The air is fresher. It's filtered. You know, there's so many improvements, so many structural and engineering and environmental advances have been made in the last 50 years, which the new tower incorporates. Mm-hmm. But all that said, the new tower makes constant reference to the original Twin Towers. As I said earlier, there's that 200-foot square base, which was the footprint of each of the towers.
Mm-hmm.
They rise to the roof line of the towers.
Mm-hmm.
And then at certain angles, you will see absolutely the square edge of one of the original Twin Towers. And then there are these wonderful chamfered, beveled edges on the tower that catch the light. The light down in Lower Manhattan is magnificent. You know, it's between two rivers, so there's lots of moisture in the air, which makes the buildings very luminous. But the one thing everyone agreed on the original Twin Towers is that when the light caught them and caught their edges, they were beautiful. Mm. And you can see those same edges on the new tower.
Christopher, thanks so much for your call. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. That's the toll-free number that you can call to join our program. We're talking with Judith Dupre, author of One World Trade Center, Biography of the Building. Obviously, we're talking about the all-new One World Trade Center. It's a state-of-the-art skyscraper. It's the tallest in the Western Hemisphere. And I believe about the I'm pretty sure I'm right on this. It's the third tallest in the world, 1,776 feet to the top of the spire. And certainly the significance of that number we've already brought up. We had a caller who couldn't hang on but wanted to know what the cost of this building was. How much did it cost to build it, and what do they get for rent?
Well, it's the most expensive skyscraper ever built, and it, you know, the cost was upwards of $3 billion.
Wow.
Very expensive. However, the Rudin Center for Transportation did a very interesting study, which you can find online there at NYU, and they assessed this investment in One World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a financial analysis and had some very interesting statements to make. One, the Port Authority will recoup its entire investment, $15 billion total, just a little bit more than that, within the next few years. And from 2002 through 2020, the World Trade Center, the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, will have provided more than 10,000 full-time jobs every year. That's a lot of jobs, John.
Wow.
One thing that doesn't come up is, you know, the 2008 recession that was just such a black cloud over the whole world, really. You know, building the World Trade Center in many ways kept New York City's economy going during those dark days. 10,000 jobs a year, and it will very soon begin to recoup its investment.
Mm-hmm.
And it was expensive for lots of reasons. It was expensive because of the number of security measures that had to go into this building. Everyone who worked on the building, including me, is operating under a very strict non-disclosure agreement. There are safety features in that building that only a handful of human beings on Earth know.
Hmm.
There was quite a lot that had to be done. Two train lines, the PATH train from New Jersey and the number one subway, they had to be kept running while the building was built. And the 9/11 memorial absolutely had to open by the 10th anniversary of September 11th. And making that a priority added tens of millions of dollars to the cost of that project. And I give the Port Authority a lot of credit because they absolutely stood behind that goal of getting the memorial open by the 10th anniversary, and it cost them quite a bit of money, and there was no question that that was going to happen.
We have some more callers who want to join us. Let's go to Thienesville, and Peg is on the phone. Peg, thanks for joining us on the Joy Cardin Show today.
Yes, I am fascinated by the subject because we are former Connecticut residents. And back in the late 70s and 80s, our children, our son and his wife, lived and worked in London. And their granddaughters were 4 and 7 at the time. And they came to visit us. The granddaughters came to visit us one time in Connecticut. And my husband and I wanted them to have a New York experience because they hadn't ever been to New York. So we did. We drove down to New York City and took them to the Empire State Building, which we felt was a significant landmark on the New York scene. And we also, that same day, visited the Twin Towers. And we took the elevator up to the 90th floor, which was the observation deck at mm-hmm. the time. And I believe that's where the restaurant was also, but I can't be sure about that.
Windows on the World, yeah.
Yeah, and we looked out over this New York scene for miles and miles everywhere. It was fascinating, but it was scary. It was very scary. And the girls were speechless. They were 5 and 7, something like that. And it was such a significant day in their lives. Yeah. They will never, ever forget that, and neither will I.
I'm so glad that you called, Peg, because I have to tell you that there were so many happy memories at the Twin Towers. Family visits up to the observatory, birthday celebrations, anniversary celebrations at Windows on the World, which was the biggest of the restaurants up there. And, you know, my oldest son, Brendan, I adopted him when he was just a little boy. He was 3. And I lived downtown, and we were on the plaza of the World Trade Center when he called me Mommy for the first time. And so when the towers went down, I have 2 boys now, and, you know, they were little kids, and, you know, it was on the TV, and Brendan said, Mom, did nothing happy ever happen there? And I said, no, there were so many happy memories, which added to the, you know, just the loss of that day, just all the happy times that many of us had down there.
Peg, thanks so much for sharing your story with us. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and continue our conversation with Judith Dupre about the new book, One World Trade Center, Biography of the Building. We're talking about how this building came to be, what it means, what's in it, how it was built, how much it cost, all sorts of things. We have more questions from people who've emailed and called in, and more of your calls as well at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The new One World Trade Center is the tallest building in America and tallest building in the Western Hemisphere. Third tallest in the world, I believe. 1,776 feet all the way to the top of the spire. Clearly, it was built on the site of the Twin Towers in Manhattan. We're talking about that structure this hour with Judith Dupre, a writer, architectural historian, and public speaker. She's author of a number of books. The one that we're discussing this hour is the recently released One World Trade Center, Biography of the Building. We had a question from Daryl in Couderay who wants to know if Larry Silverstein is still the owner of the property.
Larry is not. He bought the right to develop the World Trade Center, the original Twin Towers, 6 weeks before the towers fell. And he eventually worked out an agreement with the Port Authority where he would develop 2, 3, and 4 World Trade Center. Those are the adjacent skyscrapers. Larry Silverstein, however, also built 7 World Trade Center, which is just it's next door to the site. And that is an extremely important building for lots of reasons. It's a half-pint prototype of One World Trade Center. All the teams got together, the architects, the engineers, the builders, they got together on 7 World Trade Center. They worked out many of the safety and environmental issues at 7, and then they continued on and built 1 together. So all those working relationships, so important, were already well-developed. And I give Larry Silverstein so much credit because in 2002, he started rebuilding 7 World Trade Center. Every tower with the phrase World Trade Center with that address, every tower went down on 9/11. And Larry insisted that rebuilding start. And that insistence was catalytic because it moved people off the dime. You know, it wasn't what should we build, but we need to rebuild. And 7 World Trade Center, which is routinely appraised as the finest tower, one of the finest skyscrapers, certainly in New York City, that that building opened in 2006.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think most people who haven't been to Manhattan and who don't know the physical geography of that area probably don't know about all of the buildings that are in that neighborhood. Could you just kind of, for those of us who haven't been there and who haven't seen all of this and aren't familiar with this, give us kind of an idea of what all is there. I mean, we think about One World Trade Center, but now you've talked about 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Mm-hmm.
What's down there? And describe that for us, please.
Okay, so it's Lower Manhattan. It's the very tip of Manhattan, which almost the very tip, and so it's between the East River and the Hudson River, and the Manhattan narrows at its southernmost point. On the site itself, the site is 16 acres. The centerpiece of the site are the 2 massive memorial pools, which remember all those who were lost on 9/11 and also in 1993. Those pools have the largest purpose-built waterfalls in the world. They are extraordinary. Those pools are set on the plaza, and then surrounding that plaza are 1 World Trade Center, 2, 3, and 4 World Trade Center. Then you have a tiny angular building called the Pavilion, and that is the street-level entrance to the 9/11 Museum, which is completely underground. And that museum is extraordinary. When you visit that museum, you go down 70 feet to bedrock, and by the time you get from the entrance down to bedrock, the building itself has told you the whole story of 9/11. It's an extraordinary building. Also in the works is St. Nicholas Greek Orthodox Church. And this is a lovely, tiny little church that was grandfathered in, allowed to build at the Trade Center because their church was destroyed on 9/11. And then you have the transportation hub. And this is easily the most exuberant design down there. It's designed by Santiago Calatrava, and it's that building with the long, spiny rafters that extend out. People say it looks like a stegosaurus. People think it looks like something from the distant past or the far future. But it is this marvelous transportation hall. It's a very important new building in Lower Manhattan. So you have these 9 structures on the site. And then surrounding the site, you have classic New York City skyscrapers, like the Woolworth Building, once built by Frank Woolworth, the retailer, once the tallest skyscraper in New York City. You have Trinity Church. You have St. Paul's Chapel. Both of those churches, so important on 9/11 in terms of housing rescue workers. Across the street, from the World Trade Center, you have Brookfield Place. And this is a development that went up in the late 80s that I'm very proud to say I was part of the team that developed that project. And it is beautiful buildings designed by the architect Cesar Pelli. But what is particularly important about that project is that for the first time it opened up the waterfront to New Yorkers. And so there's a 1.5-mile long esplanade. You can walk along the Hudson River, and that's a wonderful thing. And then right nearby you have Federal Hall, you have Wall Street, a little further south you have Battery Park, where you have Clinton Castle. There's so many landmarks mm-hmm. in Lower Manhattan. And I encourage everyone who's listening, please come and visit. It is vibrant and alive and full of history and full of life.
It's definitely on my bucket list. Let's take another call. Mike is with us in Madison. Mike, thanks for joining us on the Joy Cardine Show today.
You're welcome. I just wanted to ask, well, say that it's very interesting. I'm enjoying the talk. Concerning the elevation of the building relative to today's sea level and whether it would withstand something like Hurricane Sandy in the future?
Yes, yes. Good question. Critical issue. Absolutely critical issue. So Hurricane Sandy, of course, was devastating to this region and quite a lot of flooding at the World Trade Center. And the city, along with some other entities, are now creating very innovative solutions that will hold back the ever-rising tides and extreme weather. That is in the works.
Mike, thanks. It was a great question. Here's another one. Steve, we have an email from Steve in Madison. And this is something I was going to ask about, too. Are there public access restaurants in the top floors of the One World Trade Center?
Absolutely. So One World Trade Center is a private office building. But the top three floors are dedicated to a public observatory, One World Observatory. And there are three restaurants, places where you can get a snack or have a fancier meal. The views are absolutely spectacular. So it's very democratic. Everyone in the world is invited to go to the very top of that building and take a look around.
I don't know. I have this height issue. I might have to force myself.
Please come and visit, John. I will hold your hand.
Okay.
You're going to be very safe up there, and the views are worth it.
All right. I won't go next to the window, though. In the weeks after 9/11, architects and engineers actually wondered if the attacks would mark the end of the skyscraper era. That didn't happen because there are taller and taller buildings going up all over the world. Why do you suppose it is that we keep aiming for the sky with our buildings?
Well, I'm just going to throw out one more little statistic there for your audience, John. More skyscrapers have been built since 2001 than were built in the century preceding. So we are building tall. Now, One World Trade Center is the last of the tallest that are in the United States. The tallest buildings in the world, for all my fellow skyscraper geeks out there, we all know they're in the Middle East and they're in China, and they're located outside of the United States. The skyscraper is the only truly American architectural form, and we have exported it around the world. And our Western architects, mostly Americans, are building skyscrapers throughout the Middle and Far East.
Mm-hmm.
They're human beings, you know, I think it has to do with some very primal issues of survival. You know, if there was a dangerous animal, you climbed a tree, you could escape. If you were up in a tree or you're higher up on a mountain or in a tower, you could see the enemy advancing.
Sure.
Everything about being vertical is positive, right? Human beings, we're standing up, we're vertical. It's good. If you're horizontal, not so good. So there's lots of reasons why we build tall. It's never particularly economical to build an extremely tall, a mega tall, as they're called, or a super tall. I mean, there's all these categories of tallness, right? It's just skyscraper is actually kind of a small thing. Now we have mega talls and super talls. But, you know, it's about power. It's about creating identity. The tallest building right now is in Dubai, the Burj Khalifa, and that's much, much taller than One World Trade Center. And, you know, what they decided to do in Dubai is they wanted to create a lasting identity, and they built the tallest building in the world, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
No one knew where Dubai was, or very few people were. Now people know. So it's a way of creating identity. The issues in China, for instance, are different. They have a very practical need because as that country goes from an agrarian to a city, more urban populations, they are building very tall and many, many buildings to house people.
Yeah, they've had space issues for a long time in China, in their cities, and
yes,
the population is huge. So, you know, that makes sense for them to do that. I'm wondering if, obviously, you're interested in architecture and in skyscrapers. Is there another project in the United States that's under construction or on the horizon that you're particularly excited about?
There are a number of projects that are going up in New York City that I'm excited about and also a little bit anxious about because, you know, we have a whole new group of extremely tall towers that are going up in Midtown. And right now we have 432 Park. I call it the Lonely French Fry because it's right on, it's on the edge of Central Park, and it is just a harbinger of what is to come, even taller buildings. But before we end, John, I have to give a big shout out to the University of Wisconsin in Madison because my youngest son is a sophomore there, and he is studying real estate. He is a proud brother of Delta Upsilon. And so I just want to give a shout out to UW.
Okay.
I love that school. I'm so thrilled.
The acorn didn't fall far from the tree then.
It did not. It did not. And he is, you know, he's so happy to be in that real estate program, which is, I believe it is the top rated in the country. Just an excellent program and wonderful people, such kind, good people. And I am a total Badger mom now.
Wow, good for you.
I'm like, go Badgers. And I'm not even athletic. My goodness. I've got the Badger T-shirt, the Badger Christmas, you know, ornaments. I've got it all. I love the University of Wisconsin.
You don't have to be athletic to be a fan. We have less than a minute left. But what's the takeaway you want people to have from this book project you did on the One World Trade Center?
I'd like them to read the book and learn about this unbelievable, very complex, profound collaboration. And I want them to remember that despite all the evil in the world, I want them to remember what human beings are capable of. And we are capable of great and noble things. And let this tower be a reminder of that.
All right. You know what? That's a great place to leave it. Judith Dupre, thank you so much for writing this book and for joining us this morning. It's been a fascinating conversation.
Thank you so much.
Judith Dupre is a writer, architectural historian, and public speaker. She's the author of a number of books, including Skyscrapers, A History of the World's Most Extraordinary Buildings, and, more importantly, the recently released One World Trade Center, Biography of the Building. Thanks also to Niaja Ellison and Brianne Chasso and Bill Martins for producing this hour of programming. Big thank you to them. They do a lot of the heavy lifting here, and then I show up and talk. It works out pretty well, I think. And thanks to you for listening. Of course, tomorrow at this time, it's the Week in Review. We'll take a look at the week's top news stories, a lot of political news, of course. We'll have a couple of guests in from opposing political viewpoints to battle it out on the air. That's tomorrow morning at 8. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.